and leave Mama on the bed, her face up to the ceiling, her eyes open, all the warmth gone from out the middle of her. Cold at the heart, time worming its way through her hardening veins. When Michael comes back, I'm on the porch. He ignores the steps and leaps to where I'm sitting. The wood creaks when he lands, and I imagine it crumbling. Dry, rotted, and warped from the heat, me falling through where I sit on the floor down to the clay earth underneath. That opening up, a hole straight down, an endless well. It is the first hot day of the spring, a foretaste of the damnation that will suffuse the air in the summer, that will make everyone and everything bend. Baby, let's go. What? I just got back. I figured we could take the kids up to the river today.
Mama's gone.
I can't stop my voice breaking between the two words. Can't stop the cry that comes out of my mouth instead of the sigh. Michael sits on the floor next to me, pulls me into his lap, arms, rump, legs, and all, so that I am a great baby, and I slump into him, knowing that he can bear me, will bear me. I put my nose in his stubble-roughened neck.
Let's go.
He murmurs.
Up to owls.
Michael knows. He knows what I'm really asking for. The seed at the pulpy heart of the fruit.
We can just leave.
To get high. To see Given again. Even as I think it. I know he won't come. That wherever he has gone with Mama is final. But the part that Mama looked at in pity across the table, that part hopes. We can't, he says.
Please.
The word is small and acid as a burp. It lingers between us. Michael grimaces as if he can smell the horror and grief in it. All of it distilled to one pungent syllable. The kids. The sky has turned the color of sandy red clay, orange cream. The heat of the day at its heaviest, the insects awoken from their winter slumber. I cannot bear the world. I can't, I say. And there are so many other words behind that.
I can't be a mother right now. I can't. Be a daughter. I can't remember. I can't see. I can't breathe.
And he hears them. Because he rolls forward and stands with me, picks me up, and carries me off the porch to the car. He puts me in the passenger seat, closes the door, and climbs behind the wheel. The car shrinks the world to this. Me and him and this dome of glass, all the hateful light, and dogs shying into ditches and docile cows and crowding trees, the memory of my words, of Mama's gray paper face, of Jojo's and Michaela's reaction to my slaps, of Pop's shrinking, and of Given's second leaving. Our world, an aquarium. Just a ride, Michael says. But I know that if I continue to ask, sour the air of the car with pleases, he will drive to Misty's, get her to call her friends up north, call Al, make one last call to Pop to say, just a few days. That he will drive for hours into the black soiled heart of the state, back toward the cage that held him, drive so far the horizon opens up like a shucked oyster shell, that if I ask, he will go. Because something in him also wants to leave his teary hug with his mother, his fight with his father, my death-crowded household behind. We move forward, and the air from the open windows makes the glass shudder, alive as a bed of mollusks fluttering in the rush of the tide, a shimmer of froth and sand. The tires catch and spit gravel. We hold hands and pretend at forgetting.
Chapter 15, Jojo. I sleep in Leonie's bed now. I don't have to worry about her kicking me out of it, waking me up with a punch to the back, because she ain't never here. Not really. She come back every week, stay for 2 days, and then leave again. Her and Michael sleep on the sofa, both of them fish thin, slender as two gray sardines, packed just as tight. They don't move when I walk past them out of the door in the morning to bring Kayla to the Head Start bus. Some mornings they gone by the time I come back inside for my book bag. The long dent in the sofa the only way I know they was there. They sleep on the sofa because Pop sleeps in Mam's room now. He got rid of the hospital bed the day we buried her. Dragged it out behind the house, into the woods, and burned it. Told me not to come back there, but I saw the smoke. Heard the flames slapping. Sometimes, at night, after Kayla done fell asleep on my shoulder, so deep her head's heavy as a cantaloupe, I walk to the kitchen to get a glass of water and I hear Pop through the door. Hear his voice threading through the keyhole. Once I heard him clear through the wall. First I thought he was praying, but then, from the way his voice whipped up and down, I knew he wasn't. Sound like he was talking to somebody. I asked him the next day, when I got home from school and he was sitting in his usual spot, waiting on the porch with Kayla sitting next to him on the swing. Pop? He was shelling pecans. He looked up at me, but his hands kept working, kept breaking the shell into shards, prying the meat free. Every other half he'd get, he'd pass it to Kayla, and she popped the whole thing in her mouth. Smile at me when she chewed. Was you talking to somebody last night? He paused, half a pecan in his hand. Kayla patted his arm, prodding. Pop, she said. I want it, Pop. He passed it to her. Did Leonie call? I asked. No, he said. I should have known, I said, and spat off the porch into the sand. I wish she was there. Imagine what it would feel like if I spat right at her, if she'd even notice. Don't, Pop said, and went back to shelling. She's still your mother. Michael, I said. Pop brushed the bit of dust that rinds the meat from his hands and shook his head. And after that, if I heard him through the door, or through the walls, his voice rising like smoke up into the night, I didn't even ask. Because in the swing of his head, the swish, the folding of his wrinkled neck, I saw him lying in the bed in the dark, staring up at the ceiling, looking where she looked when she died, his eyes staring, heard him calling her name, a name I hadn't heard since before the cancer. Philemon. And then, Philly. And then I knew what he was doing when he thought us asleep. Something like praying, but not to God. How he was speaking and asking and searching the craters and the mountains and the ceiling. Searching for ma'am. Kayla patted his arm again, but she didn't ask for another pecan. Just rubbed him like Pop was a puppy. Flea itching and half bald, starved for love. Sometimes late at night, when I'm listening to Pop search the dark, and Kayla snoring beside me, I think I understand Leonie. I think I know something about what she feels. That maybe I know a little bit about why she left after Mam died. Why she slapped me. Why she ran. I feel it in me too. An itching in my hands. A kicking in my feet. A fluttering in the middle of my chest. and unsettling, deeper. It turns me awake every time I feel myself slipping. It tosses me like a ball through the air. Around 3 a.m. it lets me drop, and I sleep. I don't feel it during the day, mostly. But something about the way the sky turns peach when the sun's on its way down, sinking into the horizon like a rock into the water, brings it back. So I take to walking when I know it's coming. But not down the street like my crazy granduncle. I walk back through the woods, follow the trails past Pop's property line, down into the shadowed half-light under the pine trees, where the brown needles spread like a carpet over the red clay earth, and when I walk, it makes no sound. One day, there's a raccoon pawing at a fallen tree, digging grubs out the trunk. He hisses, "Mine, mine, all mine." Another day, a large white snake drops onto the path in front of me, falls from a branch of crooked oak before slithering to the roots and climbing back up the tree to hunt newborn squirrels and weak-beaked, just-hatched birds. The rascal scales against bark. The boy floats and wanders, still stuck. And the next, a vulture circles overhead, black-feathered and strong, calling. "Here, boy, the way through is here. You have the scale still? Here." And then that feeling of dissatisfaction, of wormy grief, eases a little, because I know I see what Mam saw. I hear what she heard. In those meetings, she's a little closer, until I see the boy laying, curled into the roots of a great live oak, looking half dead and half asleep, and all ghost. "Hey," Richie says, "sometimes I see more than Mam." "Ugh," I say. I'm mad as shit, because when I see his big ears, his arms and legs skinny and brittle as fallen branches, I know part of me been waiting on Mam. Been hoping I'd run into her on one of my walks. And when I see him, part of me know it ain't never gonna be Mam. Never gonna be her sitting on a tree trunk, a rotten stump waiting for me. That I'm never gonna see her or hear Uncle Given call me nephew again. The wind swoops down into the gloaming, brushes me with a great wing, and rises. "What are you doing here?" I say. "I'm here," he says. He runs his hand through his hair, and it is still as rain-eaten stone. "I see that." "No." Richie reclines against the trunk like it is a great seat. "I thought..." He looks toward the trail behind me. Looks toward my house. Makes a sound like breath but doesn't breathe. "What?" "I thought once I knew I could. Cross the waters. Be home. Maybe there I could..." The word sounds like a ripped rag. "Become something else. Maybe I could... become the song. I am cold. I hear it sometimes when the sun sets, when the sun rises, the song in snatches, the stars, a record, the sky, a great record, the lives of the living, of those beyond. See it in flashes, the sound, beyond the waters. But I can't, don't, I can't come inside. I tried yesterday. There has to be some need, some lack, like a keyhole. Make it so I can come in. But after all that, your ma'am, your uncle, your mama, I can't. You've..." He makes that breath-sucking sound again. "Changed. Ain't no need. Or at least ain't no need big enough for a key." A yellow jacket whizzes my neck, wanting to land and suck. I wave it away, and it circles again until I slap at it, feel the hard little body ping off my palm and ricochet off into the gloom, in search of easier food. "There's so many," Richie says. His voice is molasses slow. "So many of us," he says. hitting the wrong keys, wandering against the song. He sounds tired. He lies down, looks up at me from his bed. His head is bent wrong from the root beneath it, which butts up against his neck, a hard pillow. Stuck. You seen the snake? Did you know? I shake my head. Me, he drags. Neither. So many crying loose. Lost. His blinks. A cat on the ledge of a nap. Now you understand. He closes his eyes. Let's go a bullfrog's croak. Now you understand life. Now you know death. He is quiet as sleep, but he moves. One long brown line rippling like water. And then I see it. He ascends the tree like the white snake. He undulates along the trunk to the branches, where he rolls out along one, again in a recline. And the branches are full. They are full with ghosts, two or three, all the way up to the top, to the feathered leaves. There are women and men and boys and girls, some of them near to babies. They crouch looking at me, black and brown, and the closest near baby, smoke white. None of them reveal their deaths, but I see it in their eyes, their great black eyes. They perch like birds, but look as people. They speak with their eyes. He raped me and suffocated me until I died. I put my hands up and he shot me 8 times. She locked me in the shed and starved me to death while I listened to my babies playing with her in the yard. They came in my cell in the middle of the night and they hung me. They found I could read and they dragged me out to the barn and gouged my eyes before they beat me still. I was sick and he said I was an abomination and Jesus say, suffer little children, so let her go. And he put me under the water and I couldn't breathe. Eyes blink as the sun blazes and winks below the forest line so that the ghosts catch the color, reflect the red. The sun making scarlet plumage of the clothes they wear. Rags and breeches, t-shirts and tions, fedoras and hoodies. Their eyes close and then open as one, looking down on me, and then up at the sky. As the wind circles them and moans, their mouths gaping now, the airy rush their song, the rush. Yes. I stand until there is no sun. I stand until I smell pine through the salt and sulfur. I stand until the moon rises and their mouths close, and they are a murder of silver crows. I stand until the forest is a black-knuckled multitude. I stand until I bend, find a hollow stick, turn to the house, and whip the air in front of me, away from the dead, to find Pop holding Kayla. They shine bright as the ghosts in the dark. We was worried about you, Pop says. Yes, they hiss. You didn't come back, he says. I shrug even though he can't see it. Kayla squirms. Down, she says. No, Pop says. Down, Pop, please, she says. Let's go, I say. Knowing that the tree of ghosts is there makes the skin on my back burn, like hundreds of ants are crawling up my spine, seeking tenderness between the bones to bite. I know the boy is there, watching. Waving like grass and water. Please, Kayla says, and Pop lets us slide down. No, Kayla, I say. Yes, she says, and then she toddles past me, unsteady on the dark ground. She faces the tree, nose up to the air, head tilted back to see, her eyes Michael's, her nose Leone's, the set of her shoulders Pop's, and the way she looks upward, like she's measuring the tree. All ma'am. But something about the way she stands, the way she takes all the pieces of everybody and holds them together, is all her. Kayla. Go home, she says. The ghosts shudder, but they do not leave. They sway with open mouths again. Kayla raises one arm in the air, palm up like she's trying to soothe Casper. But the ghosts don't steal. don't rise, don't ascend and disappear. They stay. So Caleb begins to sing, a song of mismatch, half-garbled words, nothing that I can understand. Only the melody, which is low but as loud as the swish and sway of the trees, that cuts their whispering but twines with it at the same time. And the ghosts open their mouths wide and their faces fold at the edges so they look like they're crying, but they can't. And Kayla sings louder. She waves her hand in the air as she sings, and I know it. Know the movement. Know it's how Leonie rubbed my back, rubbed Kayla's back, when we were frightened of the world. Kayla sings, and the multitude of ghosts lean forward, nodding. They smile with something like relief, something like remembrance, something like ease. Yes. Kayla tugs my arm and I lift her up. Pop turns. I follow him as he looks for raccoon and possum and coyote, bends branch after branch as he leads us back to the house. Kayla hums over my shoulder, says shh, like I am the baby and she is the big brother. Says shh, like she remembers the sound of the water in Leonie's womb, the sound of all water. And now she sings it. Home, they say. Home.
Sing Unburied Sing was written by Jesmyn Ward and read by Kelvin Harrison Jr., Rutina Wesley, and Chris Chalk. It was recorded by Paul McDonald and Ben Sellers at Marini Recording Studio in New Orleans and by John Muller at Beat Street NYC. Editing and post-production by Common Mode, Paul Fowley, Technical Director. Terry Hogan was the mix engineer. The associate producers were Aaron Larson and Tiffany Ferrari. Sing Unburied Sing was produced and directed by Michael Noble. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Sing Unburied Sing is available in print from Scribner.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.